I'm told that as an infant and a toddler, my grandmother would sit me on her knee and tell me that someday I was going to be a pastor. I certainly didn't plan to be. No one in my family was a minister, and at that age, and even into college, I had no such plans either, believe me. But that's what my grandmother told me. She was my mother's mother, and she and my mother raised me the first 6.5 years of my life. And they saw to it that I grew up in a Christian home. And so on this day that we recognize church teachers and youth leaders and others involved in the Christian education program of the church, I want to pay a bit of homage to all those who had an influence in my life in the faith, and particularly to those two women who raised me in the faith. I remember them reading me Bible stories, stories of Jesus calling the disciples, of Samson, and my favorite, David and Goliath. My earliest memories of church are of going from a small city, Huntington, West Virginia, where I was raised, to the country, Gill, West Virginia, where my grandmother was raised, deep in the hills of Appalachia. And by the way, it's not Appalachia, Appalachia. My grandmother had persuaded the session of our home church of First Presbyterian in Huntington to begin a home mission church in Gill because there was no church there. So Sunday after Sunday in the afternoon, she would go with her daughter, her grandson, and various seminary interns like Anders, who were voluntold to go to conduct the service. I'm told that not long after she started the church in Gill, the local moonshiner, who had his still just up the holla from where she had the church built, closed down shop. When asked about this, he reportedly said, "Business has never been any good since that darn preacher lady opened up church." Now, mind you, those weren't his exact words, but that's good enough with the children here. That's close enough. When I was 6.5, my mother remarried. He was a fine Methodist man who adopted me, gave me his last name, and raised me as his own. She changed political parties, and he changed denominations. He became a deacon and later an elder. My grandmother became the first woman elder in her church, and my mother a deacon. Yes, the faith that those three had and with which they nurtured me was not a faith lived in isolation, but rather a faith that was related to a community. We were related in faith not just to our family, but to our church family. The First Presbyterian Church of Huntington, West Virginia, a strong and vital church, the second largest Presbyterian church in the state. And I was raised in that church as a part of the baby boom generation. There were over 30 in my grade of the Sunday school class alone, and God forbid, most of us were boys. Energetic boys. Imaginative boys. Mischievous boys. In fact, our names brought trembling to the hearts of each Sunday school teacher and youth group leader in that church. And yet, despite ourselves, we were nurtured in the faith. We were nurtured by people like Lady Lou Jenkins, a Sunday school teacher with whom we did some memory work. The opening lines of the Psalms were especially stressed. O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Or by Mr. Ford, another Sunday school teacher who taught us the shorter catechism, if you can imagine that, question by question. And the last thing we did each Sunday in Sunday school before we went to worship was to have sentence prayers. It was a very fidgety experience, as I recall. I frequently peeked to see if my peers had their eyes opened or closed. And sometimes their eyes were opened and they'd be looking right back at me and we'd giggle and then couldn't pray when it came to be our turn. We couldn't seem to help it. I remember being embarrassed at first. I especially remember being embarrassed one Sunday. Someone in the church had died that week, and during our sentence prayers, one child had prayed for the soul of the deceased. After prayers, Mr. Ford kindly instructed me that at one's death, eternal destiny is in God's hands and not the result of our prayers. My friends giggled, though, as I was singled out. The problem was, you see, I didn't pray that prayer. Mr. Ford, with head bowed and eyes closed, had mistaken my friend Alan's voice for my own. I remember how badly I wanted to say it wasn't me that prayed that prayer, Mr. Ford, but until this sermon, I never squealed on Alan. Who knows, I probably prayed that we win our next Little League game, but I didn't pray that particular prayer. And yet there came a time when much of the giggling ceased, when we learned to trust one another, when we learned to trust in God, when we could calmly rely upon the Spirit of the Lord to put sincere words of faith in our hearts and minds, when we actually learn to pray. Looking back, I believe my family and church experience constituted the precious stewardship of Christian nurture. Nurture from that ancient family called the church home. Nurture, points out the minister Dean Thompson, means food for life. Training, upbringing, being supplied and fortified with spiritual and educational nourishment and development. Christian nurture, part of which I believe very strongly we should call the stewardship of the mind, that is, loving God with our minds. The more we read the Psalms, as Anders did, the more we can see that the psalmists were deeply committed to loving God with our minds. That's what they believed. That's what they taught over 3,000 years ago as they nurtured the people of God. Setting the faith and Israel's music to prayer, the psalmist provided mirrors and windows into the minds of God's people. They were, as our New Testament lesson says, stewards of the mysteries of God, and that's what was so important to pass that faith on. One biblical scholar writes, out of the abyss of despondency and skepticism, the psalmist climbed on the rocks of faith. Faith expressed with a keen sense of intellectual and social responsibility. Faith convinced in the final triumph of good over evil. Faith shared and shaped in the context of discipline and community. Faith written for generations yet unborn. While the psalmist wrote the biblical food by which Jesus was fed, faithful Jewish boy, he learned the Psalms by heart and quoted them on the cross and in his teachings. Jesus and his young friends traditioned in the teachings of their people, God's people. They were stepping out upon a remarkable story which had begun long before they were born. They were traditioned in a way of life as a way of being, a way of nurturing, growing in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and neighbor. And friends, Dean Thompson points out that the Presbyterian Church is deeply rooted in this tradition of nurture, education, and mental stewardship. Every Sunday, we still try to stand on the traditions of John Calvin in Geneva and John Knox in Edinburgh and their time-honored emphases on the importance of biblical and theological understanding in the everyday life of the church. Any religion that says the human mind is unimportant, Calvin said, is an unhealthy religion. It's unhealthy because God is the creator and giver of the human mind, which should be used for the glory of God and which should not be left outside the church doors when we enter. So why can I stand here in this place and confess to you that I believe in the major tenets of the Christian faith? Because years ago, I was fed the belief that our teaching and traditions are not religious fantasies. Rather, they are adventurous and reasonable attitudes of faith which offer meaningful clues into this mysterious universe. And why can I stand here today and try to pass on the major tenets of the Christian faith to you, even when at times I do not live up to them? Because the biblical signpost, including the doctrine of forgiveness, offer me a most hopeful dynamic which helps me find my way through life's fog, mist, and haze, and daily decisions. And even when I fall into the arms of an everlasting, ever-loving God. Now, we pastors don't hear this as often as we used to. But still, from time to time, we hear something like this said. Pastor, we haven't been a part of the church much since we grew up and left home, since we got married. But the kids are coming along now, and we want the best for our children, even if we haven't always sought the best for ourselves. They need the Sunday school. They need worship. They need the youth groups and the music groups and the fellowship groups. And they need the life of the church. And you know, Pastor, that's exactly what our family did for us. Yes, I know. I know, this is our tradition, the stewardship of Christian nurture in the Christian home and in our extended family, Christ Church. And friends, This is not cold stuff, this Christian nurture. It is warm stuff. It is heartwarming stuff. This is personal faith seeking vibrant understanding. They are so related, the mind, the heart, the soul. They represent your personal need and your personal calling to love God with your entire being. This is the lasting message of Christian nurture. We have been called forth, you and I, to love God with our mind and our heart and our soul, that is, with our whole being. Yes, Christian nurture is learning, deep learning, but it also involves a personal commitment to Christ that is beyond our knowledge, beyond our understanding, beyond our study. And this is what we are called to do today. And especially you are called to do as you begin to look forward to the coming of a new pastor. It's not just your pastor's responsibility, understand. It is yours as well. I didn't know it at the time, but it was the last conversation I was to ever have with my grandmother. The last years of her life had not been kind to her. Her second husband and both her adult children, my mom and my uncle, had died. She had had a broken hip that even with surgery had not healed properly. She had suffered a stroke, and she had had both her legs amputated. Nevertheless, my friends, she kept the faith. Or let me put it much better. The faith kept her. The faith kept her. But she never lost her love for others, even though she would get discouraged. And especially, she never lost her love for the Lord. And during this last conversation, we were talking on the phone about a place called Kilgore, Texas, and the possibility of my moving there. If her heart's desire had been known, I'm sure she would have wanted me closer to her there in West Virginia. But with simple and grace-filled authority, she instructed me in the faith one last time. Let the Lord lead you, Bill. Just let the Lord lead you. And so we went. Serving God there for 18 years, raising our two children in the faith there. Thanks to Sunday school teachers, church school worship and youth group leaders, Christian education committed people like so many of you. We thank God this day for every one of you. Amen.